Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Do me a favor, will you, Chucky? Take this to the laundry for me.
What is it?
My sheets. I pissed in my bed.
This. Wait, no, wrong podcast. Hello, everybody. What do I do? I
just keep going. It's again with this. Today's episode
is season 6.
Nope. Season 5, episode 16.
Sentence to life. And now you're your hosts, Tara Bunting and Sarah Ariana.
You know, I'm not entirely convinced that was not a bit that Dave was doing.
No.
On theme with our A-plot.
He doesn't know anything about it, though. The only thing he knows about this episode is that gif that I tweeted yesterday of Steve. Well, we'll get to it. Which I almost didn't want to show to him, and then I remembered that I tweeted it. That was my proof that he actually is still following me on Twitter and has not muted me because of... my various pinko tweetings the past week.
Just to clear the record, season 5, episode 16, Sentence to Life is what we're talking about.
Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah, we forgot. Beverly Hills 90210.
The original. Not the remake.
Wow.
All right, let's just since we're here, let's do a little quick reset. You can purchase t-shirts inspired by this podcast at glarkware.com, including Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know, The Blaze, A Lot of Parents Read It, and Don't Be Such a Squeeve, all available in a variety of attractive colors and a couple of styles at least, several different vendors. It helps us a lot if you can go to iTunes or whatever your podcast provider is and write a positive review. It helps other listeners find us. And we are happy to tell you that starting the week of the 12th, we will go back to twice a week podcast drops, at least probably until Christmas, and then we'll go back to one a week. But you'll have a couple of weeks in there where it'll be...
stockpile for the holidays.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to get away from your family, go down into the basement, into that weird crawl space room in the basement, hide behind the moldy boxes of old blankets and listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. We're here for you.
Yep. So look forward to that.
Merry Christmas.
That was a very, very specific personal note there.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't either.
Speaking of
things that we would rather not talk about, Andrea's dumb love life is our E plot today. Oh, it goes all the way up to E.
E-U. So Andrea is back at the laundromat. With Hannah, when Peter, a.k.a. Sarah's ginger boyfriend, shows up, inept flirting ensues. He says he was disappointed that she threw away his number, and she asks how he knew that she did. And he says that's the only reason that she wouldn't have called him. Har har. He'll give it to her again. And then Hannah starts kicking off and ruins the mood. Good job, Hannah. Later, out of nowhere, Hannah's got a high fever and both of her parents are like completely losing their shit about it. Like, it's whatever. And then so they take her.
Also, her father thinks that putting a stuffed cheetah in her face is the best. Like, he seriously is like trying to muffle the sound of her crying with a stuffed animal. Like, I get it, but that's why I'm not a parent.
Right.
Jesse, you're the worst. This is in the visual aids. Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Yep, at previously.tv. So then they take Hannah to the ER. Of course, the resident there is Peter. Andrea awkwardly covers, and Peter is smart enough to go along with her. But later, when Hannah is fine, Peter says he talked to her pediatrician. There's no reason to keep her there now that her fever's come down, which means the time is right for Peter to be like, hello, to Andrea out in the hall. Andrea hedges that it never came up what her real situation is, but then admits that she liked not being a wife or a mom with too much laundry. And Peter says at least now he gets why she didn't call. But he wasn't totally honest either and shows her his wedding ring. She can't believe he's married also. He notes that it's funny how neither of them bothered to look at each other's hands until now, and Andrea is very Andrea about it in clip two.
If you're married, what were you doing flirting with a babysitter in the laundromat?
Do you really have to ask that question, Ms. Fluff and Fold? Or should I say Mrs.?
Hey, I've never done anything like that before in my life.
And you assume I have?
I don't know what to think about any of this.
Look, the short version of the story is I got married way too young for all the wrong reasons. And now I'm paying the price. Same as you.
It's not the same as me at all.
Isn't it? When did you decide to get married? Before or after you flunked the home pregnancy test?
That's none of your business.
In other words, after, cough. I just love how she gets up on her high horse about this. Like, you were flirting back, bitch. You could have said you were married and you didn't. So whatever. Why are you judging this guy for doing exactly
also,
what he did?
Also, be glad he thought you were a babysitter and not...
grandmother.
Bubby.
Totally.
The failure to observe lip liner protocol remains completely out of control. Mm-hmm. Carteris is not the only victim here, but it's really a pity because her look is like, it's still really 90s, but it's mm-hmm. coming online, except for the like Joan Crawford thing that's happening in the lower half of her face.
Oh my God. Yes.
Free
so
Carteris
right.
forever.
I think I have in my notes, she looks so dynasty, and I stand by that because her hair is also like, it's very liony, like it's starting to calm down into a more 90s shape, but like it's short on the sides and like way too big. Anyway, shut up. Enough about yeah. Andrea. Let's move on. But first,
avid listener Marnie is turning 40 and Chris wanted us to wish her a happy birthday. A birthday she'll be spending in Las Vegas.
Ooh, so what?
Lost wages.
So what better time to bust out the again with this Vegas challenge? Five ways Marnie is bound to do Sin City better than the Bev Niner crew.
She's unlikely to elope there with a dim-witted Richie Rich, whom she doesn't even recognize from that time he was her bellhop in a closet in season one.
If she chooses to stop the wedding of an ex, she'll just tell her ex's twin brother why her ex's fiance is such a skeez instead of acting all cagey about whether it's BDSM or he likes to wear diapers or what.
Even though she's much younger than Nana, she's old enough to know you wear comfy clothes to play the slots, not a periwinkle suit from the Macy's sale rack.
Her Elvis imitation is much better than Brandon's or Steve's.
And finally, if she's going to buy a slip dress wedding gown in the hotel boutique, she's also going to do standards and practices at the network a solid and treat herself to a brassiere.
Preferably one that is lined from your jailhouse rockin', non-peace smuggling, one-armed bandit pulling non-carnal marriage and joy and hosts at again with this.
And Chris.
Happy birthday, Marty! All right, moving on to our D story, Shut Up, Donna and Ray. So Donna reports from the Peach Pit after dark for the campus TV station all about the opening conflict of interest disclosure cut for time, I guess. Opening night is next Saturday. Nat says he's excited, but looks more freaked out than anything. Donna closes by inviting musicians to submit tapes to play there. The report concluded Donna starts making the case to David and Claire that Ray play there. Objections include he doesn't have a band and his music's not danceable. Not mentioned. It will have to get cut because of music rights anyway, but whatever.
Objection sustained with prejudice.
Donna claims that Ray can do anything and David decides it's not worth fighting about, which is good because Donna has shit to do. Clip number three.
Well, I'm out of here. I have an English final tomorrow morning, and I still don't know who killed the damn mockingbird.
Can the show please stop serving up proof that Donna is a child? That is a book that you read early in high school, not college.
Yeah. Also, don't give her that kind of like the stuff is bad enough. Mm-hmm. But then when they give her a line that should have been for Steve, it's weird. Like, figure out who you're writing for. Also, kill yourselves.
Seriously. Ray then later shows up at the beach apartment with a bag of takeout. Donna and her insane outfit. It's another crop sweater. You can see it in the visual aids. It's Argyle. It's too short. It's really bad. Anyway, she wishes she had champagne to celebrate his having been named the headliner at the Peach Pit After Dark opening night. Ray tells her to forget it. He's not interested. And Donna is hurt because she thought he'd be happy. But he tells her that he's not a one-man dance band. She tries arguing with him, but he's really not interested. And later still, Donna wakes up David from where he's fallen asleep, quote, studying, unquote, just in time for a fight in clip number 4.
Hey, Donna said you finally broke down and agreed to do the show, huh?
What?
We're holding a slot open for you opening night.
Really? Donna, can I see you for a minute? Alone?
Ray.
Now?
Sure.
Do I have to spell it out for you? I do not want to play at this club. How many times do I have to tell you the same thing?
I just don't get it. What's the big deal? It's a great gig.
Yeah, and I don't want it, okay?
You know, I don't understand. Everyone is bending over backwards for you, and you don't even care.
All you want to do is show me off so you can tell your mother what a big star I am.
Leave my mother out of this.
Oh, did I hit a nerve?
You know, my mother has nothing to do with this. I was trying to help you.
Donna, I didn't ask for your help, and I don't want it. So mind your own business and stop meddling in my life, okay?
Ooh, have Donna and Claire, or I mean David and Claire, even heard Ray play, like, ever? They are just going on faith that this person who clearly doesn't want to do it is even good?
Yeah, well, and, like, stop saying you don't understand, Donna. Like, since you don't understand, why don't you just let it drop? It's
right.
Just making everyone uncomfortable, including you now. Mm-hmm. Go study for your final.
Yeah. Figure out who killed the damn mockingbird. All right. And that's where things end here, I guess. I assume there was more to this, but then it got cut for music rights because in the next episode, he's all set to play it. So whatever, moving on to our C story. Dylan goes to court. At his house, Dylan and Andrea are bonding over the Bukowski book she's just brought him. Barf, and debate whether artists need to be addicts to create. But their discussion is cut short when the letter carrier comes to the door with a piece of registered mail. Andrea rolls up like it's any of her business, but Dylan volunteers that it is a notice to appear in court because he's finally being charged with a DUI. And at the Peach Pit later, Jesse gives Dylan some free advice, and Dylan is a dill hole about it in clip 5.
Look, man, you wanted my advice? Here it is. Get yourself a good attorney and throw yourself at the mercy of the court.
I don't beg for mercy.
Come on, Dylan, you were drunk. They found traces of heroin and cocaine in your bloodstream. You drove a car off a cliff. But the only thing you got going for you right now is the fact you didn't hurt anybody and they didn't find any evidence in your car.
Yeah, well, obviously, they didn't look very hard.
Man, what's wrong with you? What are you trying to prove here?
I'm not trying to prove anything, man. If I'm guilty, I'm guilty. I don't need a lawyer telling me that. Don't throw the book at me.
Oh, that's very honorable of you, Dylan, and very, very stupid. If you can manage to swallow a little bit of pride here, you'll get a fine, probation, and they'll take your driver's license away for a couple of months.
I don't think so.
What is this argument even? Like, I don't beg for mercy. So what are you going to do? Like, just go in and be like, sentence me to the max? Like, I don't understand Dylan's position here at all.
I don't either. And I also don't understand, like, why the show is acting like Jesse is just as good as a real lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a 1L.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
And also, like, then don't help him. I don't know. Like, we all know what's wrong with him. He's a dill hole.
Mm-hmm.
Find somewhere else to be, like taking care of your child.
For instance. Well, but which is basically what happens. Jesse gives up and gives Dylan the contact information for a lawyer he calls expensive but good. So I don't know. Do people know about Dylan's money or not? I forget. Who knows what? Doesn't matter. Later, Dylan is stalking out of the courthouse in his terrible, cheap, shitty suit when he runs into Jesse dressed ditto and gets salty in clip number 6.
Boy, it took a little longer than I expected in there. How'd it go, man?
Well, not so good.
What do you mean?
What do I mean? I mean, that's some pretty crummy advice you gave me. I can't believe I even listened to you.
No, wait, what happened?
I'll tell you what happened. I got probation for about a year. Just took my license for a couple of months.
Bum, that's great, man.
Yeah, man, thanks.
Fuck you. Fuck both of you.
Criminal stuff.
Horrible suits.
Jesus. Jesse offers Dylan a ride, but Dylan figures he should get used to taking the bus. God, good luck. Just give up on life now. Decide you're never going anywhere. Moving on. Seriously, the bus in LA is a fucking nightmare. I mean, it was when we lived there in the 90s. I assume it was no different 2 years earlier than when we tried to take it
that
time.
that time. Every time I like think about LA public transit, which is never because no one does,
no.
I'm reminded that like one of the gazillion times Leif Garrett got arrested was because he jumped a turnstile in the LA subway. And it's like, they should have just been glad anyone was even trying to use it.
Sorry, LA, you know it's true. Moving on to our B story. Kelly still hates Val. Okay, so now Kelly is wearing a fucking turtleneck on her neck burn, which you can see in the visual aids at previously.tv. Does it hurt or does it not? We still will not solve this question in this episode. She's also taking an English final, though not at all the same one Donna is in clip number 7.
Discuss the thematic use of time as a metaphor in the works of Thomas Wolfe.
How many intro English classes are there at this school? Or is Donna taking a children's lit class, which, if so, would make a lot of sense?
Well, and why are they? Well, you know what? I don't care. Let's move on.
Okay.
To the part where Kelly is accused.
All right.
Just kidding. That's where we live, and we'll be having our mail delivered from now until we end this podcast.
At this point, Valerie comes home. Kelly's back to being bitchy too / about her again for no reason that we know. This is the first Val scene of. This is the first anyone has seen of Val since she left for the holidays. And Kelly snits that they expected her back a couple of days ago. Val says she decided to sneak in a couple more days before her first final. And then things get awkwarder in clip 8.
So Buffalo was good?
I didn't exactly go to Buffalo.
So where exactly did you go?
Exactly? Negril.
Jamaica?
Yeah, it's a lot warmer than Niagara Falls. I bought some souvenirs for everybody.
Well, thank you, but I thought you were going to see your mom.
I was. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't face going back home. Not yet. So I called my mom and she understood.
Well, it's good to have you back.
Yeah. I'm gonna go unpack. I can't believe her. She's a compulsive liar.
Kelly, stop the bombing.
I've taken 4 semesters of abnormal psychology. I know what I'm talking about. She's a textbook case.
I'm sorry, Dr. Taylor. And when did you get your PhD?
Tell you what. Why don't you call her mother? Ask her. Hmm?
You know what? If it'll get you off my back and off of her case, I might just do that.
Good.
Good.
Fine.
Fine.
How much money does Val have, like, that she can just all of a sudden take a trip to Negril? Because that was not my impression that she came from wealth.
No, me neither.
Or that she doesn't have a job either that we have seen.
And also, abpsych is 1 semester. Did you fail it 3 times? It's nuts and sluts. It's not that hard. Sorry. It's also not something you major in. I think she says later at some point that she's majoring in abnormal psychology. Like, you just major in psychology.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
Why do I care?
The next day, Kelly is in another turtleneck, if you can fucking believe it, when she comes over to get brayed at by Brandon in clip 9.
Guess who I talked to this morning?
Valerie's mom.
Correct as usual. And yes, she did know about Valerie's little jaunt to Jamaica. What she couldn't figure out is why I was calling her to ask her if she knew.
Oh, well.
Oh, well? That's all you have to say? Oh, well?
What do you want me to say?
I don't know. How about, you were right, Brandon. I was wrong about Valerie.
No, I was wrong about Jamaica. I still don't trust Valerie.
What has she ever done to you?
She doesn't have to do anything. Can we just study now?
Fine.
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 Good.
Hey, Kel. I thought I heard the doorbell. Hi. Listen, I'm glad you're here. It saves me a phone call. I need to ask you a favor.
Oh?
Can I borrow your abnormal psych notes?
I thought you dropped that course.
Only in spirit.
But you haven't shown up all semester.
Sure I have. I've only missed a couple classes. Look, it'll really help me out.
Look, Valerie, I work my butt off in that class. Why should I go out of my way to help someone who can't even bother to show up?
I didn't think it was that big of a deal.
Well, it is.
Kel.
Look, I'm sorry I asked.
You know what? You really go out of your way to be mean to her.
I can't believe you. She uses people and you know it.
Come on, Kelly. If Donna asked you'd help her or me, you'd let me share your notes.
You guys go to class.
So does she.
Brandon, Valerie is a liar and a user. And the sooner you wise up, the better off we'll all be.
Okay, again, in like two episodes ago when Steve was having all of his fucking issues, Brandon was like, yeah, Val's a liar. And now he's her defender. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. And also, what does she even know about Val using people? Nothing. Mm-hmm. She's mad because she boned Dylan. It's not that big of a deal.
It's true. Dave, do you have something to add?
Just at the end there sounded like the intro to Strangers with Candy. Loser, an abuser, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. A loser, a boozer?
Boozer, yeah, yes. I forget. It's been a while.
Has been a while. We should watch that again. Anyway, that's not the subject. Now, on campus, Val calls Kelly, who's still in bed because their psych final is about to start. Kelly overslept and now has to be in debt to Val. Oh, no! And after a Welsh dinner that night, Val and Kelly clear the table. Kelly tells Brandon to take the trash out or something, and left alone with Val, manages not to be shitty for 10 seconds in clip number 10.
Valerie, I just wanted to thank you for what you did this morning.
No biggie. You would have done the same for me, right?
So how'd you do on the test?
No answer.
You mean, did I pull through without the benefit of your notes? Yeah. You can stop feeling guilty now.
Look, I'm trying to say I'm sorry. I've been a bitch. I owe you one.
Yeah, you do. But one of these days, I'll collect.
And then Kelly pulls the most glorious cat buddy cat butt that ever cat butted, including actual cats.
Yeah.
It is great.
I ended up putting it in a diptych with Val, because in addition to Kelly's shitty expression, they are both wearing the exact same lipstick, aka the 90s lipstick. So it's insult to injury for both of them. Let us move on. But first, we have a message for Kristen.
Allie wanted us to mark the occasion of Kristen's birthday, so we've made her a list of 5 ways she can enjoy a winter birthday the Beverly Hills 90210 way.
She can rent a machine to spray snow past a loved one's window.
She can go to Big Bear and flirt with a ski bum while he rubs her feet.
She can bundle up in a floral dress that goes all the way down to her ankles.
She can take advantage of Black Friday sales at the official shopping venues of the 90210-iverse. Fred Siegel, Maxwell's, where Celeste works, Pippa's, Century City Plaza, and the Beverly Center.
She can treat herself to a new evolution seminar, compliments of her A+ ab psych midterm. If that doesn't make any sense to you right now, well, Allie, just stay tuned for the next episode. Oh, we're getting there. So from all of us and Allie,
happy birthday, Kristen!
Happy birthday.
Finally, our A plot, and I use the letter A loosely. Steve meets Uncle Milty. So it's time for Steve to start his community service, as previously discussed, and he's doing it at a senior citizen's residence that is awesomely called Intermezzo. Steve apparently gets to use the special convict parking right up front as my crusade against the show's cavalier portrayal of malparkage continues. That's not the point of the storyline, I guess. Steve walks into a bunch of old people standing in the foyer, some with walkers, while a corpse is rolled out, and he ends up standing next to Milton Berle and Milton Berle's extremely weird wig, and they have this conversation in clip 11.
Boy, what some guys won't do to get out of here.
Excuse me?
That was Corelli. Dropped dead during dinner, between the meatballs and the jello.
Sorry to hear that. Excuse me.
Yeah.
The gentleman over there?
Huh?
What's his name?
Saul Howard. Famous old actor. It's before your time.
Excuse me, Mr. Howard.
That's right.
My name is Steve Sanders. You worked with my mother on a sitcom called The Hartley House? Samantha Sanders.
Samantha Sanders is your mother?
Yeah, I used to hang out on the set when I was a kid.
That's right, now I remember. You're Chucky.
No, Chucky was the name of the kid on the show.
Oh.
My name is Steve. I'm their real son.
Oh.
I knew you looked familiar the second I walked in that door.
68 years in the business. And all anybody ever remembers is Grandpa Hartley from some lousy sitcom.
This is the only person to shit on Samantha Sanders or the Hartley House and not get punched in the face by Steve, basically, in the whole run of the show. So way to be an old person, Saul, and escape that fate.
We should probably note here that Ian Ziering is given a credit for the teleplay.
Yes.
And that Ian Ziering's coach should probably be, acting coach, should be run out of town for what he is asking his class. Like, the stricken faces and the almost crying act outs are almost as bad as they've ever been, I would say, Steve wise.
Yeah, it's not great. But let's get through it. So Steve goes to meet with the residence's administrator, a Mr. Warren, who is played by legendary Hayes, that guy, Kenneth Tiger. So much better than this. He identifies Steve as the pyromaniac, hilariously. Steve wants to correct that impression, but Mr. Warren don't care. And Steve says he was told that he'd just have to give this dude something to sign and that he would take care of it, as if Griffin's dad's deal wouldn't go out the window as soon as Steve physically assaulted Griffin and kicked him out of the keg house. But whatever. Mr. Warren looks disgusted, but presents the papers while Steve sits back smugly like the asshole we know he doesn't always have to be. And again, I say, what happens to Steve's willingness to pay for what he did if he's like trying to weasel out of it already? Whatever. A class struggle breaks out in clip 12.
You know, it never ceases to amaze me how you rich kids get your parents to take care of stuff like this.
Just tell me where I sign, okay?
Right here. Great. While you're at it, why don't you sign them all? Then I won't have to look at your smug face again.
What was I supposed to do here anyway?
What you're supposed to do is complete 100 hours of service to the residents in this home. Clean bedpans, mop floors, bus meals, wipe the drool off of faces of people who are too old to help themselves, nothing that a nice boy from Beverly Hills wants to deal with.
You got that right.
Steve, don't be that guy.
Not the time. Not the time to be truthful.
No.
About your feelings about our elder citizens.
Yeah. Steve is sauntering out, having completely beat the system he was just railing against last week, when Saul calls him into his room to give him a paper bag. It's his sheets, as we heard up top. Saul wet them. And if the orderlies or whoever find out, he'll have to start using plastic sheets and a diaper. And Steve is sad, but he agrees. And when he comes back with the clean sheets, Saul has the oldest ass TV remote ever. It's like the size of two old Nintendo controllers, like taped together back to back. It's one of those with like a hole in the middle where you can see the little sensor come out. I took a picture for the visual aid so you can see it. But anyway, Steve returns. Saul calls him Chucky at first, but he actually does remember who Steve is, as we hear in clip 13.
I know who you are. You're Rush and Samantha Sanders' son. I always liked your mother. Your father I couldn't stand. That's why I quit the show. Your father told everybody I couldn't remember my lines. You know what it was I couldn't remember? To kiss your father's ass.
I have a little trouble with that myself sometimes.
Oh, boy. This is actually the first we hear of like Steve, of what Rush did for a living, though, because all of the ways he's talking about it makes it sound like Rush was a producer on the show. Which is news to me, I feel like.
It's true. Which I'm still not sure is actually true, but on the other hand, who cares?
Indeed. Steve picks up a photo and asks about Saul's kids. Saul says he has had a daughter, but that he lost her a long time ago in a car accident. Steve volunteers that his biological parents died in a car accident, and Saul seizes on this announcement to say he's a good guy because he's not biologically related to Rush, which is when Mr. Warren rolls by in clip 14.
What are you doing here, Sanders?
My job.
I beg your pardon?
I'm going to fulfill the terms of my community service. I'm going to work here the full 100 hours.
That's very admirable. But I think you better be prepared. This is not a country club. I'm not going to make things easy for you.
Fine. I'm not looking for the easy way out this time.
Mr. Warren, I saw the doctor today.
How nice.
He says I have Jewish Alzheimer's.
Jewish Alzheimer's?
Yeah. That's when you forget everything but the guilt.
Can I see you for a moment, Mr. Sanders?
Bastard has no sense of humor.
Neither did whoever wrote that joke, including you, Mr. Burrell, if that was you. Because what?
Yeah. In the hall, Mr. Warren has a warning for Steve in clip 15.
Look, I've seen this before.
What?
If you think you can waltz in here, do your 100 hours, and change these people's lives, forget it. Leave Saul Howard alone.
Why? So he can just shrivel up and die?
That's why he's here, Steve. Don't make it any harder on him than it has to be.
And then there is a push in on Steve that goes on for 28,000 years.
Actually, I think that's the next act out, unfortunately. But yes, there's a lot of pushing in on Steve, looking very upset and stricken and like he's out of his depth. Does that make him make smart choices? No, it does not. So let's get to it. The next day, Saul is holding court in the cafeteria when he asks Steve to sit for a card trick, and he's in the middle of tearing up his chosen card when Mr. Warren shows up behind him. When Steve tosses up the pieces, it becomes clear this is less a trick than a joke, and Mr. Warren orders Steve back to work but says nothing about the mess he just made, as I would have. So then Steve is mopping when Saul comes out to apologize for getting him into trouble, and they both think of themselves as prisoners at Intermezzo. Steve suggests taking Saul out the next day, but Saul isn't sure it's a good idea because he can't walk far. But Steve says he'll drive him and says, does he like burgers? Saul likes chicken sandwiches, and Steve knows the best place in town / only place in town.
So the next day, it's free.
Yeah. So the next day, Steve shows up at Intermezzo to pick up Saul for their big date, but it looks like he's not getting the bro hang he hoped for in clip 16.
Saul, baby, up and at him. It's game day, man. Come on, what are you watching TV for? I thought we were going to get out of here for a change.
Who are you?
What do you mean, who am I?
Man, what are you doing here in my room? I don't know you.
Come on, I'm Steve. Chucky?
I don't have any money. Leave me alone.
Who needs money? I got lots of money. It's my treat. Come on.
I told you I don't have any money. I don't have anything. Now get the hell out of here.
Are you joking with me? Come on. What are you talking about? I'm not doing anything
wrong.
I'm
going to call a nurse. That's what I'm going to do. Nurse, help me.
So,
I'm
what are
being
you...
robbed.
Robbed? I'm not robbing.
You know what I'm talking about. He's stealing my Emmy. Don't let him steal my Emmy.
No, everything's all right.
Listen, let him do it.
No one's stealing anything, Mr. Howard.
He was about to get up there and steal it.
I would never do that.
Look, here, Mr. Howard, here it is.
Oh.
Safe and sound, see? I want you to take it easy.
Of course, I didn't do anything.
I know. Maybe you better wait in the hall. Now, I just want you to rest and take it easy, all right? Just rest. I don't want you worried.
What's wrong with him? How come he doesn't remember me?
Mr. Howard has Alzheimer's. He doesn't remember you. He's confused and he's scared.
How long is that gonna last?
Well, who knows? It comes and goes. Maybe a few days, maybe a few minutes. And eventually, for the rest of his life.
That's where the
cut!
Yeah. Oh, Steve. So it seems like this is the first he's ever heard of Alzheimer's, like as a thing that exists that old people get, because he's shocked by this.
Yeah. Or if like old people.
Yeah.
Period. Like hasn't everyone by the time they're like 8 had enough experience with old people that they're like, yeah, sometimes the shit's like that. It's not a big deal. Like just go get a nurse and see what's up.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up, Steve.
Well, the next day, a despondent Steve is pushing a cart in the hall when Saul, all dressed up to leave, comes out to the hall, pouting that Steve is late for their lunch. And instead of having heard what the nurse said and realizing that he is not qualified to take care of this guy on his own, Steve is super psyched to take Saul out. Fucking Steve. So Steve is also stupidly proud of his car. Saul says he had a 59 Corvette he wants to drive. Steve at least is wise enough to nix that idea. Saul apparently has needled Steve to let him drive the entire way to the Peach Pit, because duh, where else would they go? A bunch of the gang have gathered there at Steve's request. Only Brandon gets up to shake his hand. Kelly's at the end of the booth, and Saul immediately sits next to her and starts getting all handsy on what I would have thought were her burns, but I guess Jenny Garth forgot because she does not react. Also gross. Donna sets up Saul for his card trick, and everyone pretends they're not grossed out by an old person in their midst. The trick takes forever, but he actually does pull it off. Claire brings up her favorite old movie of Saul's, but he's already starting to drift away, and Steve feels bad. He locks back in for his card trick because he can't remember that he already did it, and when Steve tries to take him home on the ground that he seems tired, Saul gets belligerent with him. Oh, dear. So then back at the intermezzo, Saul is all tucked in when Steve brings him a cold glass of water, which of course means it's time for Steve's daddy issues in clip 17.
You're a good kid, Chucky. No matter what else Rush did, he raised a good boy.
Look, do me a favor, okay? Don't mention his name. I'm not talking to my father right now.
Don't say that. Please. The most important thing is family.
Yeah. Tell that to my old man. I don't even think he knows what the word means.
What are you bitching about? You got it so bad? Look at you. You got your whole life ahead of you. Why don't you stop complaining?
I hate my father. He makes my life miserable.
My daughter hated me, too. She said I worked too hard. She was right. I was always on the road. When I was around, I fought with that kid night and day. Till we finally stopped talking. Months went by. And one day I called her on the phone and I said, I just want you to know, honey, no matter what happened between us, darling, I love you and I'll always love you. 2 weeks later, I lost her. But I thank God every day I made that phone call. Chucky, listen to me. Do the right thing. Don't let too much time go by before you make up with your father. Otherwise, you'll regret it for the rest of your life.
Good night, Saul.
Chucky.
Yeah.
I know I'm losing my mind.
No, you're not. You're gonna be fine.
Nah. Today was just a good day. So if I do anything strange, please. Don't let it bother you, huh?
Don't worry, Saul.
Thanks, kid.
Such emotional music. Oh my God, the show. I don't know what lessons we're supposed to think Steve is learning, but by the way, he's learning nothing at all.
No.
Because then Steve is back at intermezzo feeling himself as he goes looking for his old pal Saul in an outdoor art class, but Saul is now catatonic in his seat. Steve tries to get involved by physically moving his hand for him, but it turns out Steve is not a gerontologist and it doesn't snap Saul out of it. Steve kisses Saul on the forehead, does not say it's like kissing a peanut, unfortunately, before sadly going back to his life and forgetting that old people exist. Oh no, how is this not over yet? Steve then returns to Saul's room with a peach pie from Nat. Saul is still catatonic, not interested in pie. And then Steve thinks he's cracked it and pulls out his car keys and jingles them in front of Saul's face. Like, Saul is a fucking infant. I made a gif of this. I'm sorry, world, but it had to be done. And
it,
oh my God.
Goes on.
And it works.
And on. Yeah.
This is very irresponsible. Very. This is not how Alzheimer's work. I mean, I'm not an expert either, but don't do that to someone who's having a hard time.
Maybe it's just lost knowledge. Maybe that's the cure and we've lost it.
Well, maybe.
You know, like Sean Connery in Medicine Man.
Yes. Just like that.
Saul wakes up and grabs the keys and calls Steve by his name. Steve notes that he didn't call him Chucky, and off they go for a ride on the condition that Saul drives. Ha ha ha. Steph, they never saw him again. Boy, this was a bad episode, you guys. Really, really bad. Bad stuff. So let's wrap it up with the MVP. God.
Yeah.
Everyone is so bad.
I'm gonna go with Ray.
Yeah,
for telling Donna to shut the fuck up, and mm-hmm. also for this being a plot point that they couldn't get the rights to, so the episode was like 5 full minutes shorter than usual. Yay! Yeah.
Good point. I'm gonna say Val because who wants to go to Buffalo for Christmas? No one. Good call, Val. Least valuable player.
Kelly.
Yeah. She is really a bitch for no reason.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Steve for trying to change a life he is not qualified to change at all. And I don't know. What do you think? Let's do the Kim challenge this time.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to know.
5 ways from this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, he's reading Bukowski. Bad choice.
Shouldn't walk past an open flame in that suit. Dangerous.
shouldn't take the bus. Just bad. Just, you have a little money, get cabs.
Shouldn't take Jesse's advice. He's not a real lawyer. Dangerous.
And, apparently representing himself in court, which is bad and dangerous. And just because he's mad at his old junkie self, I still don't understand what point he was trying to make with any of that. But anyway, that makes 5.
Next time on Again With This, while Brandon and Dylan conduct a road trip brayoff, Kelly negates my last nerve when she meets the notorious Professor F.I.N. Get X turned off by our visual aids at previously.tv for this and all the other Again With This episodes. That's at previously.tv, and you can follow us on Twitter at previouslytv. I'm Pretty Crummy Advice, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Damn Mockingbird Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And Stolen Emmy David T. Cole is our producer. He's on Twitter at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
I think you guys got through the whole episode without making a Milton Berle penis joke.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.